How you doing? Jim Davis, Curtis Biedelman, Davis and Beadle, the podcast. It's like, it's kind of like I read a thing the other day, Beadle, about are they going to make a Napoleon Dynamite 2? And I'm kind of thinking, is that really a good idea? Is anybody really clamoring for that? I would like to think people are still clamoring for Davis and Beadle on some level, but Napoleon Dynamite 2, I'm just not so sure anybody really wants that.
I would love to see that. I, for one, would love to see it because, I mean, the first one, it takes at least two viewings to enjoy.
Oh, absolutely.
And
oh, yes.
So now to actually have something that you're like, nobody knew what to think of Napoleon Dynamite when it first came out, right?
Right, yeah. Right?
Like, it's like, what is this? Is this good? Yeah, wait a minute. I think this is good.
I think this is hilarious.
Okay.
You're like about 10 minutes into that movie, you first watch it going, did I waste my time? What am I doing? And you're kind of, but there's something about this intrigues me. And then you watch it like the second and third time, and you're just going, it's a masterpiece. It's a fantastic film.
It's great. So the second one, if they were to make one, it could only be one of two things, right? It's either going to be better than the first, hits every little point for you, you know.
Probably not.
It's going to be a complete and utter disaster. There will be no in between if they do it. It'll be a complete and utter disaster, or it'll be perfect.
Well,
kind of like Dumb and Dumber, right?
Exactly. And John Hader says he would love to do it, and you know, they want to set it now. He's, you know, middle age. And so you got, you know, Pedro and Deb and everybody that are middle age. Here's my thought. Did you watch Red Hot, Wet Hot American Summer on Netflix when they decided to do the series?
No, I didn't watch very much.
I loved it. I personally enjoyed it. And have them be back in high school. Have them be these middle aged people like they did on Red Hot, Wet Hot American Summer, but they're still in high school. I think that'd be perfect. I think there's a show on the Peacock Network. It's like AP Bio. I think it's kind of like that, where the actors are all older, but they're playing high school kids. I think that's that show. See, I would sign up for that. If you're just playing it just like they're still in high school.
Still going.
And Napoleon and Kip are still working at the chicken farm, picking up eggs. The old man, and I've worked for that guy. The old guy stuck his hand in the jar. I've worked for that guy, Bucking Bales.
Oh yeah,
stirring up the whatever that was in the mason jar.
Yeah, just a little brine.
It's good
whatever,
for you.
Whatever it comes to be, what would be your favorite? Like if it comes out and they say, "Yeah, we're going to do it."
Okay.
What would you look for? Which character would you look forward to most? Would it be Pedro? Would it be Napoleon? I mean, most people, I think, are going to go straight for Kip, right?
Oh, Kip, sure.
Kip makes the whole show.
And LaFonda. Exactly. What happened to Kip and LaFonda? Where are they in their relationship? Yeah. Mine?
We want to know.
Uncle Rico. Can he still throw that football over those mountains? Will he still be pining about that chance if Coach would have put him in the fourth quarter, they would have won state. I would want to see Uncle Rico back doing his thing. All right.
I hope they do it.
Maybe if John Heater listens to our podcast, maybe he'll cast us. Maybe we'll have some roles. Are you there? I think I lost you, man. Screen's frozen up. There we go. There you're back. Okay.
It's definitely your end of things when this happens.
Probably is.
You don't freeze up at all, and I'm sitting literally 10 feet. From my
I don't know. It's
what well, I'm so yeah.
The pull the curtain back. I mean, I'll use my phone to do your part of it. So maybe my phone probably sucks. You know what? I will take full responsibility for the connection issues on my Big Lots phone.
You need to wear a tinfoil hat and it'll fix it.
That seems appropriate in 2020 to wear a tinfoil hat. All right. Let's start with the Broncos. You know, look, I didn't think the Broncos would win Sunday. I thought, okay, this, you know, Dolphins are playing well. Their special teams have been really good. Their defense has been really good. Tua Tagovailoa it was a gutsy decision by Brian Flores to put him in over Fitzpatrick, because Fitzpatrick was winning football games and playing really well, but it panned out. But on Sunday, Broncos got after Tua in 6 sacks. I thought they did a great job running the football. Offensive line played well. Dalton Reisner had one of his better games. And, you know, after that first interception, Drew Lock played pretty well. And, you know, I was pleased to see the way the Broncos bounced back after just looking like dog crap in that loss to the Vegas Raiders.
Yeah, and the defense was awesome. I mean, Tua, he's been good, but he hasn't been, like, off the charts good. The best game he played was against, I believe, the Cardinals, where they went back and forth a little bit. That was his best game. But
he's been a game manager. He's been more of a game manager kind of guy so far.
And they've, you know, give him credit because they've figured out ways to win with the I think they have a really good defense. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the special teams and all that good stuff. So it was like the recipe for disaster for the Broncos, right? Because the special teams for the Broncos has just been awful. And the offense has been giving the football away left and right. And the Dolphins have been taking it away left and right. So that start of that game, you're like, oh, for God's sake, here we go again. This is terrible.
Here we go again. Let's run the ball on first down. Let's get hit for a 2-yard loss. Let's bring up second and 12. And
throw a terrible pick. And so just, you know, it didn't start with the look of anything different. And then all of a sudden they started to run the ball. And when they started to run the ball, things opened up. And again, there you go. You see Drew Lock at times looks as good as anybody in the league.
Yep.
And, you know, and he had some moments in that game where he still made some poor decisions, I thought, or missed some guys. But for the most part, he looked pretty sharp and got him in a lot of different positions to score. I mean, let's be honest. That game should not have come down to the final play. They should have kicked a field goal when it was fourth and one or two or whatever it was. They should have scored when Melvin Gordon fumbled at the goal line, all those good things. So that really should have been an easier looking win than it was. But again, you go back to this Drew Lock thing and you're going, I think he can do it. And we've said that all along. I think he can. He's just got to be consistent when he does it. So
that was
his best game for a while.
Sure. I like the fourth down and one call. I like going for it. I think they needed
really?
To have.
Why?
Because they need.
Explain yourself, Davis.
They've got to find a way to get some confidence in their offense. And you're only going to do that is, you know, but look, whether they kicked the field goal, went for it, if Melvin Gordon doesn't fumble, he's now tied with Zeke, like four fumbles on the season for the most of running backs. If Melvin Gordon doesn't cough it up at the one, what they did on that fourth down, kicked field goal, I kicked field goal, becomes essentially irrelevant because he puts it in the end zone. They're up. They win the football game. They extend their lead, and it's, on to the New Orleans Saints.
True. I think it's crazy to think they should have gone for that, though.
Crazy.
That was coming out of the... Yes, that's coming out of the locker room with a 7-point lead, right?
All they do is kick field goals, though. I mean, it's good that Brandon McManus is Gus, the field goal kicking mule, but that's all they do is kick field goals.
They have torched their offense. Their defense was killing it. The only reason that there was even points on the board was a phantom holding call on, I think it was AJ Bouye on the first interception that got taken away.
Which is
they
so funny.
They were killing Tua. They were killing
Tua. They were
offense.
They were getting after it.
Why would you not just take points and go, hey, let's put the best aspect of this game back out on the field?
You know, I've been doing a lot of FanDuel, so it's the now newly emerging degenerate sports gambler in me that's embraced that kind of Riverboat Ron.
You had the over.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, crud. Okay.
What did you do?
I just dropped you for some reason. I don't know. I'll see if I can fix it in post-production. I'll see if I can fix it in post-production. I liked it. It didn't really bother me. If Melvin Gordon doesn't fumble, then our argument is somewhat irrelevant because they're up by another score and it's a 2-score game and it's over with. But now they face the Saints and it's without Drew Brees. It's with Taysom Hill. And Taysom Hill, I find his story intriguing. Guy that blew his knee out twice at BYU, gets a chance to play in the league as a special teams guy, slot receiver, emergency third string quarterback. They pay him $21 million. You got Jameis Winston, who you brought in, who, Yeah, I get he threw 30 interceptions, 30 touchdowns, but a guy that's played quarterback in the league for 5 years, and they go with Taysom Hill. And Taysom Hill plays really, really well. He gives them that the quarterback run game dimension that Sean Payton obviously doesn't have with Drew Brees. It'll be an interesting game on Sunday to see the Broncos try to figure out how to slow down Taysom Hill, because the key there is you got to stop Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas is the a lot of the, and Alvin Kamara, the key to what their success is offensively, regardless if it's Jameis Winston, if it's Archie Manning, if it's Bobby Hebert playing quarterback or Drew Brees. That's kind of the key. If they can stop Kamara and Michael Thomas, you got a good chance at least slowing them down some.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Taysom Hill is a fun story. He seems to fit that mold of guys that you really like if they're on your team, but you just don't know what to do with them, right?
Sure.
Like he's not a wonderful passer, but he is a good player, and he's a heck of an athlete, and he's a good leader, and all those good things. And so when coaches are creative and they figure out how to use them, and you have tools like Kamara and Thomas and Cook and half the receiving core, I mean, they do have some good tools to use, then, you know, it becomes difficult as a defense when you're preparing for somebody like Drew Brees, who, you know, he's just not going anywhere. He's going to try and spread the ball around, but he's not going to leave the pocket to do it, really.
Right.
This guy, you have this whole other element of now he gets out of the pocket and he can do too many things to hurt you. And so if he makes good decisions, then he's going to tear you apart. You got to force him into some bad decisions. And if you can do that, I think then he'll find out that Taysom Hill probably isn't quite the passer or the quarterback that people are hoping him to be. But it is interesting when they put these game plans together, because it's a lot like Lamar Jackson, right? I don't think Lamar Jackson's a real wonderful passer, but that other element just kills you.
Right.
And if he makes good decisions, you're in trouble as a defense. So,
well, going back to, because some people have made the comparison Taysom Hill to Tim Tebow. And of course you and I were doing the show in the height of Tebow mania. And people say that, and I go, have you guys watched tape of Tim Tebow when he played quarterback? Have you watched how he threw the football back in the day? There's no comparison. While Taysom Hill, I'll grant you, maybe is not as polished because he hasn't played quarterback a lot since college at BYU. But you watch him throw the football, he's a lot more accurate. The mechanics are so much better. To compare him to Tim Tebow in that regard, well, he's just a running quarterback. He's a guy that can throw the football a hell of a lot better than Tim Tebow ever could throw the football.
He's not going to throw it downfield very well, but he'll throw, you know, how many games out of Tim Tebow's era did they throw it like 12 times or less in a game?
because they had that guy because he couldn't throw it.
And as I'm saying, you're still going to throw the ball with Taysom Hill, you know, 20 to 30 times a game. So you trust him to pass it a lot more than he did Tebow. And they're both, you know, they're similar from the respect of they're guys that obviously can hurt you with their legs, but they seem to be guys that teams like to rally around these guys. They're good leaders. For better lack of a better term, their teammates love them. They play hard. Right. They do a lot of different things. They're good dudes. Their teammates love them. So there's some similarities there. But, yeah, you're right. He's a better passer than Tebow, especially in those intermediate areas and things like that. But it is interesting to see that offense work with him versus Drew Brees, because you never felt like he was the backup, right? Because he's not Drew Brees. So it's like, that guy can't be the backup. He has to be something different.
Right.
But now here we are. They had to make a choice, and this was their choice. And it's probably the right one. You know,
what does it say about Jameis Winston's future? That here's a guy that hasn't played quarterback, started since college, that's the guy that gets the nod over you, a starter in the league the last 5 years.
I mean, he's going to be holding the clipboard if he wants to stay in the league. Let's be honest. And I would take Jameis Winston as a backup, as a clipboard guy, for sure. You know, I don't think anybody thinks Jameis can produce without, you know, turning the ball over. And he proved that the last couple of years as a starter. He does some good things, but he just can't consistently produce the way you want your starter to, and to run your offense the way you want your starter to. Could he come in and lead a drive and make some sweet throws for you, hell yeah. But to have him out there every day, I think you're gambling with Jameis Winston because he just turns it over too much.
No, he didn't want to wear glasses, didn't want to wear contacts, got LASIK because that was the problem, right? That was all the problems with Jameis. He couldn't see well enough. He's throwing the ball to the wrong guys because his vision was crappy. Well,
sounds okay, like he's colorblind to me.
No kidding. Oh, so the Broncos defense, if they can play the way they did against the Dolphins, they got a shot. I know the shot of hanging in there with the Saints. I don't know if they beat the Saints. They certainly got a chance. So this is a far better chance with, you know, maybe some Vic Fangio at Donatell, hopefully be back. You know, some defensive disguises that maybe confuses Taysom Hill a little bit. We'll see, because we'll find out the true mastermind defensively that Vic Fangio is supposed to be. But if they can put pressure on the quarterback like they did with Deshaun Williams, had a really good game up front for the Broncos, had a couple of sacks. Malik Reed played fantastic. Bradley Chubb played really well. If those guys can play like they did this last Sunday against the Dolphins, they got a chance at maybe, I don't know, pulling off a little bit of an upset coming up Sunday against the Saints.
I wouldn't be surprised at all, actually. I think the defense has been great for the last few years, to be honest with you. It's just that offense has been so horrid and just can't seem to put anything consistent together, and your defense breaks down after you know, long runs of poor offensive play. You can only be great for so long, you know, and until you finally get some injuries, or you give up a few tough plays, or you just don't quite play as hard or as well.
Or your offense can't string first downs together and you're back on the field, right. It's a three and out and you're back on the field again.
It gets old and it gets really hard on defenses. I know people want to pick on John Elway, and there's fairness there. You know, he hasn't found the quarterback. He hasn't found the coach. He hasn't, you know, there's been too much turnover in those places. But if you ask me, the defense for this team since the Super Bowl, you know, let's put it this way, since they got blasted in the Super Bowl by the Seahawks, John Elway has put together defenses and players on that defense that have been more than capable and competitive. Yes, they've had their moments, but it's been the offense since winning the Super Bowl that has not been able to do anything to help this team. And yes, that's on John Elway too, but you got to look at this squad and this team. This offense, even at its best this year, hasn't been explosive yet. Not points wise, anyway. They have some explosive plays, but not points wise. You know, they dominated on Sunday and still only won by a touchdown because they only got 20 points on the board. You know, that defense is going to keep you in a game, and if you make them think that they're going to help you win a game, they can do it. That defense is capable.
So. Yeah, they left 6 to 14 points on the field with the
easy
go for it on fourth down, which. You know, we disagree on that, but you know, they get points either way. They potentially win by, you know, a couple of touchdowns in that game if they can put it in the end zone. But we'll see what happens this Sunday against the Saints. The Rockies had to make some moves that declare their 40-man roster before the Rule 5 draft December 10th, and they did not protect Riley Pint, who was the fourth round pick, the pitcher out of Overland Park, Kansas, high school kid. Could throw 102, you know, fourth overall, as I mentioned in the 2016 draft, played in Grand Junction with the Rockies. And he just has had a really terrible stretch in the minor leagues. Has not got past low A Asheville, was in the Arizona Instructional League this past fall. A young guy like that seems like he's lost his mechanics. Injuries have played a role. I mean, pitching, that's your forte. What do you do to fix a guy like Riley Pint? And how troubled are you that he has not got past low A by this stage? He's 23 now.
Well, I think the troubling part is that they haven't felt comfortable enough to bring him past low A. They're still trying to get him enough success, right? I mean, anybody that has a 102 plus mile an hour arm that you spent a first round draft choice on, typically, regardless of the ERA or even the strikeout to walk ratio and stuff like that, after a year or two, they're going to give you a shot against what they feel are some big league prospects and at least put you up into a double A type of situation. And they haven't felt good enough about him to do that. And the things that I've heard about Riley Pint over the course of his career so far have always been the fact that they just reached for this guy.
Right.
And he wasn't ready. He just wasn't ready. So he's still a young guy. You figure if a guy like that goes to college and stays 2 or 3 years, does he get a better chance, A, to succeed, B, to be with a certain pitching coach or pitching philosophy for 2 or 3 years? And does he grow up and grow into a little more stable mechanical pitcher, stuff like that? Whereas when you go to the pro game, you know, the instructors come and go. They're always right. looking for something. But it's really up to you to make the strides. It's really up to you to put in the work. You know, obviously they make everything available to you. You know, you're there for hours at a time and you have all the facilities and all the science and all the everything that you can ever need, but you still have to do it on your own for the most part, because the organization isn't going to just assign one pitching coach to you. They're going to have guys that are roving, that are going from field to field at the spring training complexes or the instructional leagues. You're going to hear from different guys, and there may be an overreaching philosophy, but to just develop one kid that just wasn't ready for this, it's hard unless you really decide that that's what you're going to do. And I don't think the Rockies have decided that he's worth that, to just put one pitching coach on the guy and develop him and take the time. They're looking for results and stuff like that from a standpoint of you got to go out and figure that out on your own. And I've never heard anything about Riley Pint specifically from conversations that I've overheard or had with people within that organization or scouts and things like that, that have said, yeah, this kid, he's really a grinder. He's going to figure this out. Just watch. It's always been like, yeah, he just wasn't ready for this world. And will he be? Maybe. If given the time, but I wouldn't have put him on the 40-man roster either. He needs right. to figure out how to pitch and learn how to pitch and get control of his mechanics. And a lot of times kids that age, and he's a big kid, and I'm still calling him a kid because he still is, but he's a big, tall, strong kid. It takes some time sometimes to get comfortable with those mechanics and understand, where the ball's going to go and understand what command really is at the pro level, because it's different than it is obviously in high school for sure, which is what he had only experienced, but it's different than any level of college, or even it's different at each level of pro ball of command of those pitches. So it's definitely something that I hope works out for the guy, but it sounds to me, all indications have always been that was a reach. He wasn't ready for that world yet.
And as far as the Rule 5 draft, it's December 10th. Anybody that takes him, they have to put him on their 40-man roster, their big league roster. They got to pay him $100,000. So the chance that Riley Pint gets snapped up by somebody else, a Blutarski GPA 0.0, because he hasn't shown enough for anybody to say, yeah, that's enough. We're willing to make that kind of investment in him. They're just not. And so he's still going to have a chance with the Rockies to probably hang around and develop a little longer with them potentially.
I think the interesting part about that is there are a few organizations that believe really heavily in their method, whatever it is. So whatever people they've hired and however they're going about developing their pitchers, they believe really strongly that they just have to find the body and the arm talent, and then they can make it into what they want. Now obviously there's a mental game that's a huge right. part of all of that, but there's a few organizations that truly believe that they can take pretty much anybody that fits their, checks off all their boxes, so to speak, and they can make them productive. So would somebody be able to take a Riley Pint based on his size, based on that arm talent, and say, I think we can do something with this guy. We just got to get our hooks into him.
Right.
They might, they very well might. So
it is a risk, though. It is an investment of a roster spot and money. Yeah. But if you look at, Tyler Matzek, those with the mm-hmm. Rockies, and thought he was done and ended up being on the Braves roster coming out of the bullpen. and has had a big career turnaround that, you know, maybe that could be the case for Riley Pint somewhere down the road. Speaking of the Braves, Charlie Morton now part of the Braves rotation. What's your takeaway on that? I think that's a really good addition. A guy that, you know, knows how to win in the postseason. Guy's won a World Series. You know, Houston, and there's still questions there about some things, but there's no question he's a really good pitcher. He seems like with their young rotation, the guys they have there for Brian Snitker, that's a nice addition to that team that's already a really good baseball team.
Yeah. Yeah, they're ready, right?
They're coming for your Dodgers. They're coming for you.
Let's be honest. That's exactly what they're trying to do. They got their tails handed to them 2 years ago in the postseason, but everybody went, oh, boy, they're just so young. Like, wow, didn't even expect them to be there. And this team's going to be good. Then this last year, obviously, they flew under the radar somehow because of the Dodgers and because of the COVID and because of all the weirdness. They kind of flew under the radar. But when they got to the playoffs, everybody went, oh, yeah, well, this team's really good.
Yeah, Freddie Freeman, Ronald Acuña Jr., right? They're not bad, are they? Yeah, they're pretty good.
And their pitching staff was the unknown part, right? But they really produced for them. And then, you know, obviously it didn't work out. They get beat by the Dodgers in dramatic fashion. But that's the next step, right? All right, we need people that can perform in the postseason, that understand, you know, how to get ready for the postseason, and he fits that bill. So, you know, it's a good pickup for them. Whether it pays off in wins and losses, who knows, but that's exactly what they needed, right? Was a veteran postseason, you know, innings eater that knows what he's doing when it comes to the postseason.
Even keel.
That fits the bill.
Steady guy, not a diva. Just goes out, knows how to win in the postseason, and a tremendous addition to their team. Okay, two more things left. College football playoffs. So when we have a college football playoffs, I like to think we will. Who are your four teams right now, today, that would be in?
Notre Dame, Ohio State, Clemson, and I don't know who the fourth one is.
Alabama
is a three. I forgot about Alabama.
No love for Alabama, so the number two in the nation.
I was thinking between Clemson and Notre Dame, they may have to play again, right?
ACC title game. Yeah.
So Alabama, and then Clemson and Notre Dame there. But does somebody else get to get in because they have to play each other again, or do you just stick with? I think those are the four best teams. I mean that it seems that way. I don't know. It's hard. There's some teams that are 7-0 and some that are 2-0,
or 3 or 4-0 because they started the season late. The Clemson Notre Dame game, which we're assuming we're going to see that ACC title game rematch.
Yeah.
Boy, if Notre Dame loses and they lose a close game, kind of like they won a close game against Clemson without Trevor Lawrence. Boy, should they both be in? Maybe it's that year, like in the SEC in the past, where it's Alabama, LSU. They should both be in there. If Notre Dame wins, I don't know how you can say Clemson should be in at that point. There'll be two losses to Notre Dame. And then who is that fourth team? Is it Texas A&M and Kellen Mond and those guys? Depends on what goes on in the SEC and how they do. Is it potentially a team like Florida? Once again, SEC, how do things play out there? Or does somehow like a Cincinnati sneak in? I think that'd be really cool for Luke Fickell, those guys. They find a way to sneak in. They had a real tough win at Central Florida this last Saturday. But I don't know. I mean, that's a good question, because it seems like Clemson, Notre Dame both deserve to go, right? They seem like they both should have the chance to go and play.
And I think, you know, you're right that having Trevor Lawrence play, if there's a rematch, that's the kicker in the whole deal, right? Because if Clemson then wins that with Trevor Lawrence, and like you said, and it's a good game, a competitive game, and all that stuff, then you feel okay about putting both those teams in,
right?
Florida's probably the next one on my list, I guess. But you still have to see them beat somebody of major consequence. Georgia just hasn't been as good this year.
Yeah, to me, George is out of out of the conversation. Yeah. I still
just
think
you know,
if Oklahoma hadn't lost to Iowa State, you know, they won five in a row now. We might be talking differently about Lincoln Riley in Oklahoma. I don't, and there people are saying, well, Oregon's got a better shot than anybody in the Big 12. I'm not sure how you're saying that. I mean, I don't know if Oregon's going to, how many games is Oregon going to get in by the time this is done? Four?
Yeah.
Is that fair to put a 4-0 team into the college football playoffs? I don't think so.
And that's where I say, I think the teams like Cincinnati and BYU, they're just not, it's not good. I don't care if they play 12 games. They're not going to make it because you're going to have the Big Five say, yeah, we think these teams are better and you didn't play them. So there's nothing to go by. And that's going to be what ends up killing them is they didn't get to play them. So
our conference runner up is better than either one of you two. And at least Cincinnati can make the case somewhat, well, we play in a conference. It's not a bad conference. American's not bad. Yeah. BYU schedule's not great this year.
Terrible.
They beat, North Alabama or somebody last weekend with, as the Buckeye boy calls him, Mormon Manziel, Zach Wilson. He's a really good quarterback. He's a really good football player. Yeah. So,
and BYU's a really good team, but you cannot look at their schedule right now. You cannot. And make the argument that they're as good as some of the others. You just can't. I mean, they beat Provo High School twice and Draper, Utah once. And, that schedule's killing them. It's going to kill them. And it is what it is. They would be really fortunate to make it in a normal year. And I think that this year makes it that much harder. Because there's just no way that those teams get to say, well, we played them and they played you and make those comparisons. Not going to happen. They're not going to do it.
And I can't say they're the best group of five team to be playing on a New Year's Day bowl game. I think it's Cincinnati still. I think Cincinnati would beat BYU if they faced it. I think it'd be a hell of a football game, but I think Cincinnati's a little better defensively. It could be a lot of fun to watch those two battle for. Maybe they do a play-in game. Who gets the New Year's Eve bowl game or New Year's Day bowl game? Perhaps they should do that. Dabo Swinney had the comments about Florida State when Florida State canceled the game because Clemson, not Florida State, Clemson had a player who was symptomatic. He practiced, he got on the plane, flew to Tallahassee, and Florida State. How dare their doctors, their medical staff say, well, we don't think this is a good idea. That guy's infected. And Dabo Swinney's calling, saying, well, they didn't want to play the game. It was Florida State's administration and Mike Norvell, who's had a real rough first year at Florida State. He's saying, look, we're coaches, not doctors. I don't know what your take is on it. I just think, come on, Dabo. Dabo has moments where I love him, and I love the passion he has for the game, and I think he's a hell of a football coach. But there are times he says just damn stupid crap like this that just makes me go, you're the guy, you're the program that had the infected player. It wasn't Florida State that did.
Yeah, and did they test him? I don't even remember.
He was symptomatic. He was symptomatic, and they tested him. And from what I understood, the last time I read, he tested positive. That's what I remember reading, but don't take me to court a lot.
If he tested positive, then you don't have any leg to stand on. If he tested negative, then sure, whatever. It's just like everything else, I guess. But you can't really risk it this year, and you can't. You can't argue when you're going to somebody else's place.
Right.
That's the biggest kicker in this whole thing is if you as a university and your state government and all that stuff are willing to, take the risk and willing to bring people in and you're saying, okay, let's do this and tests and symptoms be damned, whatever. Then that's up to your university. But when you are visiting a place, it doesn't matter whether it's in conference or out of conference, it is out of you have to adhere to whatever it is that they're saying. And I know it's weird this year. The conferences don't have as much power in some of this stuff this year because of state mandates and university policies and stuff like that. That would never fly in past years. It would always be what does the conference say you're supposed to do.
Right.
But that's just not the way it's going to be this year. So he doesn't have a leg to stand on when it comes to that side of the argument. I like Dabo. I like that he speaks up. I like that he's not afraid to say what he's really thinking sometimes. He doesn't always come off as a, you know, think before you speak kind of guy.
This is one of those times where I like the candor for the most part, but this time where it's like you want to complain on the plane back home and bitch to the bitch to your, you know, assistant coaches.
Your boosters.
Fine. Yeah. Do it all you want. But this is, come on, this is just was ridiculous. Okay. On the show today, we do a thing called pole dancing, top five NFL, top five college football. We always have a third category. And it's always kind of a smorgasbord of stuff. Today, since we have Thanksgiving coming up this week, top five favorite Thanksgiving foods. Is turkey an automatic number one? Or the more I thought about it today, you know, gravy is the, it is the glue guy, because gravy goes on your turkey, goes on your stuffing, goes on your potatoes. If the gravy's not pretty good, it doesn't have to be great. Just has to be pretty good. It can, it can really screw up your whole night, to quote Air Force One's and Nelly. You know what I mean? It could just scuff up your shoes. It, you know, even though it's a podcast, I still don't feel comfortable swearing. You know, it still bleeps up your whole night. If the gravy's not pretty decent, like it's gravy is an underrated player on the Thanksgiving dinner table, in my opinion.
I would agree with that, because I like mashed potatoes, but mashed potatoes with gravy is just next level, right?
It's magic.
Yeah. And same with turkey. You know, if you get, you can have a subpar turkey. If there's good gravy, you're fine. Yeah. You're good to go.
Oh, so, absolutely. You're feeling right. You know, the world is right.
Yeah. So it's definitely the duct tape of the Thanksgiving dinner. That gravy is for sure. I'm a huge fan of the turkey. Love gravy too. I'm a big green bean casserole guy.
Yep. Right there. Kenny makes an awesome green bean casserole.
All versions of it too. Everybody has their own version of it. They're all good. But, you know, do you do the canned whole beans? Do you do fresh beans? Do you do string beans? I don't care. They're all good. It's always a good one. Yeah. So, so that's probably high on my list. I'm big into the appetizer, the relish tray.
Oh yeah. Olives. Okay. Yeah.
We always had, I wouldn't eat celery all year, but then celery with a little cheese whiz on it, all of a sudden,
it's magic.
Look the hell out. It's celery man.
Cheese whiz is like gravy. I mean, all of a sudden it just makes everything better. Makes every single thing better.
You don't eat black olives all year, except for maybe on a pizza or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
Come Thanksgiving, and it's on that relish tray, you're hammering black olives.
Yeah, because you're like, because I have to have something to tie me over until the actual, entree is ready to go. Yeah.
So there you go. There's my favorites about Thanksgiving right there.
Two that just never will make my top five. Cranberries, hate cranberries, despise cranberries, will never eat cranberries. I don't despise sweet potato jams. Not something I love. I'll eat them. Yeah. But it's not. I've learned to appreciate them more as I've become a more somewhat fully formed human being, an adult.
Yeah.
Still don't love them.
I like all that stuff. But you're right. If it wasn't, if I was at somebody else's house, God forbid, this year for Thanksgiving, if I was at somebody else's house and that stuff wasn't on the table, I wouldn't think twice. I wouldn't be like, what the hell? What kind of Thanksgiving is this?
Yeah, if we don't have a Thursday, I'm perfectly fine. I'm okay with that.
If you don't have green bean casserole on your table, though, I'm leaving.
That's a travesty.
That's
a sham, and that's a mockery. It's a travesham mockery if it's not on your table.
Green bean casserole. I will take my beer and leave.
You'll take your Coors Light, go someplace else.
That's right.
hit a drive up somewhere. Hey, Beetle, you and the family have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
You as well.
And always look forward to talking sports and other stuff like Napoleon Dynamite 2. John Heater, if you're listening, we would love to be in Napoleon Dynamite 2.
Yes.
All right.
I don't know what characters we would be, but it would be awesome.
They could have like maybe a high school radio show, and we could be the high school radio DJs, like Dingo and the Baby.
There you go.
Something like that. All right. Till next time, Davis and Beetle Podcast. Have a great Thanksgiving. All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
No problem. Talk to you next week.